Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Creekside Room is Sherry Tan, and the topic of her presentation today is how safe is your drinking water. So let's listen in on Sherry Tan.
I'm Dean of Natural Sciences at Pacific Lutheran University, and I do environmental chemistry when I'm not pushing paper around. And I'm particularly interested in water quality and have done a fair amount with drinking water in the past because Tacoma, where PLU is, has some very interesting and complicated water related issues with regard to drinking water. I just wanted to, and please interrupt me at any point in time because I'd be happy to talk about what you're interested in rather than what I have lined up to talk about. But I did want to start out with a poem by Emily Dickinson. A well. What mystery pervades a well? The water lives so far, like a neighbor from another world residing in a jar. The grass does not appear afraid. I often wonder he could stand so close and look so bold at what is read to me. Related somehow they may be, the sedge stands next to the sea where he is floorless, yet fear no evidence he gives. Nature is a stranger still, the one that sighted her most had never passed her haunted house nor simplified her ghost. To pity those that know her not is helped by the regret that those who know her less, the nearer they get. This brings up mystery, tragedy, fear of the unknown. And most people don't know where their water comes from. Don't know and have a fair amount of mystery and concern about drinking water. My grandmother had a younger sister who died in a well, and maybe some of you who know older people back when wells were big open containers, open hand dug pits, know people who died in wells.
You mean they just fall in there?
Fell in the well, trying to dip water out, fell in and drowned in the well. The little girl in Texas who fell into the hand-dug well, I don't know, what was that, 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a national big deal about getting her out of the well. Fortunately, it was largely dry where she was, so she survived. Today, of course, wells are largely drilled rather than hand-dug, and they're drilled to help protect the quality of the water, not only to prevent the tragedy from a well. Around the country, about 50% of our water comes from wells. So in many parts of the country, groundwater is the same as drinking water. Do you know where your water comes from? Where are you from?
Florida.
Well,
drink. So you're relying on groundwater.
We're from Minneapolis, and I think it comes from the Mississippi. You go through something.
Depends on where you are in Minneapolis.
Mine comes from well, but I'm in Richfield.
I'm in Edina.
Right. Yours probably comes from well too.
No, I think it's the river.
Yours is the river?
I think so.
I don't know. I've been told.
Lots of people don't know where their water comes from, whether it comes from wells or
where I grew up, it was about a mile from the river, so I'm sure there it came from there.
In Tacoma and Seattle and Portland, a large share of the water comes from surface water. They each have a protected watershed where the water is collected and then piped to the city. Seattle is totally dependent on surface water from the various watersheds. Tacoma depends on the part of Tacoma you're in the season. In part of Tacoma, about 75% of the water comes from groundwater. In another part of Tacoma, about 75% of the water comes from surface water. And that changes from summer to winter. So you may be reliant on surface water during the summer and groundwater during the winter. That's very common in cold weather areas.
What is surface water? Do you mean like lakes?
Like lakes and rivers. Exactly. Holden gets its water from surface water. Copper Basin, right up here above us. All the water comes from Copper Basin, is diverted from Copper Creek into an intake and then runs into one of two tanks, well, runs into a tank up on the hill. There's a tank that came from mining days that's made out of steel that's on the uphill side at level 3, and it holds about 70,000 gallons of water. The water is chlorinated as it comes into that tank. Then it passes into a second tank, which was dedicated just about a year ago, called Glug. And Glug holds about 125,000 gallons of water. So they have a reservoir up there of about 200,000 gallons of water. It provides not only our drinking water here at Holden, but it also provides for fire capacity. So if there were a fire, they have a 15-hour supply of water in those tanks with all the fire hoses going.
Where does the water come from that runs a generator?
That comes down a flume as well. Part of it's diverted into the drinking water supply, and part of it comes down the flume to through pipes to run the hydro plant.
Where does it come from?
It comes from Copper Creek, from Copper Basin.
Way up in the mountain?
Way up the hill. When you turn around and go out of here and you see that big basin up there, straight that way, that's Copper Basin.
Is that like a lake or something?
No, it's a watershed. It's an area where the water is collected and runs down in little rivulets into the stream and then down the stream. And it comes from the snow and ice up above.
Do they use water power for electricity here?
Yeah, this is hydropower here during the summer. During the winter when they have to, they use the diesel power. They have two diesel backup big cats that they can use for energy in the winter. Electricity in the winter here is pretty marginal. Last winter they had 200 power outages, the year before 400. And the reason is that all the snow and ice in Copper Basin freezes up. And so the water flow is much less, so the water flow to the hydro plant is much less. So it means that they have to rely on diesel in emergency whenever that water goes down, water flow goes down low enough.
This creek that runs down here, river, whatever it is that supplied by the mountains too?
Mm-hmm. That's Railroad Creek. It comes from the glaciers up in the mountains, Cloudy Pass.
That runs all year.
Oh yeah, yeah, right.
But to put their hydro plant down
here? Cost about $1 million. It's been pretty thoroughly researched. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about groundwater, if you're interested in quantity issues, how much groundwater there is, and quality issues, how good is that groundwater? If you overpump the groundwater, you can deplete it. That's going beyond the, quote, safe yield of the aquifer where the groundwater is. And of course, we know that Tucson, south of Tucson and Nogales, down on the border, the El Paso area, the middle of Nebraska, the groundwater is being pumped out faster than it's being replenished. So you can think about it as mining the groundwater. You're mining something that isn't being replaced. And the aquifer is actually dropping in those areas.
It's going to stop soon then. I mean,
they're gonna, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Not only do you deplete the aquifer, just run out of water, but you also get lower quality water because the wells are drilled really deeply, 300-400 feet. So they're getting water that's fairly soft, doesn't have a lot of stuff dissolved in it. And as they deplete that aquifer, they pull in water from other aquifers that may have more salt in it. That's very common, that you get salinity buildup in aquifers that begin to be depleted. If you're along the ocean and you put your well down and you pull out fresh water to the point where you're overdrawing your aquifer, you can actually pull salt water into it. And that permanently ruins the aquifer.
Where did you say the salt comes from in a well?
It comes from
the surface?
Essentially the upper layers.
I mean a well, but what you were talking about. The
right, how you get salt into it. It comes from upper layers and it's pulled down as you pull water out.
From the rock formation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From the dirt and rock formations, the alkaline soil above. Because, of course, much of that water in the Tucson area has been there for a very, very long time, since it was much wetter, geologically much wetter. So you're actually using water that is thousands and hundreds of thousands of years old. It's been in that aquifer for a very, very long time before climate change has made the Tucson area, for example, very dry. What I want to spend a little bit of time talking about are sources of drinking water, which I just talked about briefly. I'll talk about a little bit more. Roots of contamination, types of contamination, Safe Drinking Water Act, two things that are of particular concern, lead and fluoride, bottled water, home treatment systems, and what you can do based on your specific water system. Now, if we look at, I said that 50% of the water today comes from groundwater. In rural areas, it's often 100%. You know, many farms, many rural areas don't have surface water to take their water from, and surface water is actually riskier than groundwater, more likely to get contaminated than groundwater. So most rural areas are 100% groundwater. Cities can vary. Minneapolis, Edina, Ridgefield is a perfect example, where in one part you get surface water, and in another part you get groundwater. Around the country, around the U.S., we have 198,000 public water systems. A very large share of those, 87% of them, serve between 3,000 people and 25 people. And those are the systems that are most at risk, the really small ones. 87% of that 198,000, but they actually only serve somewhere around 11% of the population. So, you know, there are lots of them, but they don't serve very many people each. They almost entirely rely on groundwater, almost without exception. Now, when we talk about places where we can contaminate our groundwater, it can involve things like road salt in the Midwest. There have actually been aquifers contaminated from road salt. Could be something as simple as a spill, old landfills and dumps that, or relatively new ones where chemicals leach or move into the groundwater. In some parts of the country, mining activities. Gas stations and leaking underground storage tanks have been a very significant cause of groundwater contamination around the country, because most gas stations put in their tanks in the 1950s, when gas stations began to proliferate. They were single-walled tanks, often steel or some kind of relatively soft metal.
Tonight we have a
iron tanks, but with time, just plain wore out. What happens is the gasoline is less dense than water, and it floats on top, and you get a little bit of water down in the bottom, and that water slowly begins to rust out and corrode the tank, and you end up with a hole in the bottom of it. And that's happened with just about every gas station in the country that was put in the 1950s, almost without exception. There may be some kind of corporation that has a wastewater treatment pond, or some kind of municipality that has a wastewater treatment pond where waste is moved into the water, and then various kinds of agricultural waste contaminating groundwater, which include, of course, pesticides, but very significantly nitrate and phosphate from fertilizers as well.
When will you be in?
Likewise, on a localized basis, it may be a home septic tank where somebody has a well, private well, as well as a home septic tank. The area I live in, which is south of Tacoma and Parkland, had public water system, but it had septic tanks until 1985. And it was considered the largest suburban unsewered area in the country at that point in time. It's a textbook case, appeared in every urban planner's textbook. And the reason was that politically there had been some strong objections to putting in sewers in the 1960s, and it had taken 20 years to overcome those objections and get the area sewered. So you had public wells and lots and lots of septic tanks on small lots, and there was contamination moving into the public water supply because of that. Fortunately, that problem has now been taken care of with sewer. I mentioned wells earlier. There can be contamination into the water supply from improperly constructed wells or wells that were not sealed up after somebody stopped using them or abandoned them. And this could involve something like a broken casing on the well. Basically, what there is a casing that goes down, and then the actual pipe where the water is slurped up that goes down. And if the casing is broken somewhere up on the well, the shallow aquifer, the shallow water, groundwater that may well become polluted may move in through that broken casing and then get pumped up. Essentially fills up this area, and down here's where we're pumping the water. So this allows a route for the contaminated water to get into the cleaner water. If there isn't a good surface seal on the well, right up around the top of the well, then with that broken surface seal, we can get surface water moving into the aquifer where we're trying to draw our water. And this down here, then, is the aquifer we hope to use, where there's a layer in between the aquifer that's more connected to the surface and the aquifer where we actually get our water. This layer in between is called the aquitard, and it essentially prevents movement from up to lower to down. Again, in the area where I live, because it's glacial outwash, you know, because the glaciers left lots of rocks there, there's very little clay layer. And because there's very little clay layer, essentially water 300 feet deep can be in contact with surface water. You know, there can be free movement of materials from surface to very deep. And that's a very risky aquifer to be drawing your water from. When one is done using a well, it's very important that well be cut off, because otherwise an abandoned well is a perfect route to get contamination into the deep water. And that's one of the big issues in the United States, is that we have not had a very good well abandonment program to seal up those wells when people stop using them. And it's particularly serious with private wells. Public wells, it's more likely they're going to get sealed up. But you've got an old house, it gets abandoned, people stop using the well, and people forget that the well is there and never do anything about it until down the road somewhere there's a contamination problem, and people then go back and try to figure out where the problem came from. The federal law that controls drinking water is called the Safe Drinking Water Act. It was last revised by Congress in 1986. Congress has been trying to revise it again and worked hard on it last year, but NAFTA, healthcare reform, the debt, and a whole bunch of other things got in the way, and nothing happened last year. It's looking like nothing's going to happen this year as well, but healthcare reform will prevent revision of the Safe Drinking Water Act. There's some things that are wrong with the Safe Drinking Water Act.
I think you make these out.
In terms of being protective, and there are also some things that are right with it. One of the things the Safe Drinking Water Act does is look at bacteria, and the particular bacteria it looks at are coliform bacteria. Now, coliform bacteria are like E. coli, the thing that caused the outbreak with hamburger, disease with hamburger last year. E. coli come from fecal material, from human waste and animal waste. So they make a very good marker of contamination of human or animal waste. Some coliform bacteria cause disease, many, many, many do not. But what they show us is that there's contamination present. And along with coliform bacteria, you may have polioviruses, you may have bacteria that cause typhoid, typhus, you may have cholera viruses, cholera bacteria, a whole bunch of other things may be present But fecal coliform make an easy way to determine whether those other things may or may not be present. If you have fecal coliform, you assume that there's a bigger problem there. So they're called an indicator species.
There is testing to find out, isn't there?
For fecal coliform, every public water system is required to test for fecal coliform. Mm-hmm. Here at Holden Village, we're treated like a small town. Town of 450 people, maximum population in the village. That for a water system that serves 450 people, you have to test the water once a month for fecal coliform. So they take a water sample and send it off once a month to be tested. And the water here is clean, no fecal coliform. Largely because very few animals and almost no people, very few people go up to Copper Basin. And there's some hikers who go up there, but it's pretty sparsely populated. Remember a big outbreak in Milwaukee about, a year and a half ago of a disease called cryptosporidium? Remember that at all? Lots of people in Milwaukee got sick.
I remember some trouble with electricity. Was
no.
it in Milwaukee?
Yeah, but
that's about it has nothing to do with them.
Milwaukee managed to get their water system contaminated with a bacterium that's not normally monitored. And that bacterium caused as many as 800,000 people to get sick. It meant that in Milwaukee they had to boil their drinking water for about a month and a half, before they got the bacteria all flushed out of the system. Because of that outbreak, people have gotten very concerned about surface water and filtering surface water sources. People were concerned before, but that really, brought it home. The city of Portland, Tacoma, and Seattle all are likely to be required to put filtration systems in for their surface water, even though that bacterium hasn't been demonstrated to be present. The other bug that can get people in surface water is Giardia. You heard of Giardia before? It's the reason we don't drink water out of the creeks around here. The Cascades, it turns out that Copper Basin probably doesn't have Giardia or very much in it, but the Cascades have a lot of Giardia. It's carried by animals and it's also carried by people. And it's not a bacterium, it's a protozoan. And biochemically, it means that it's much harder to kill it. It's a much hardier little bug. And you don't need very many of them to make people sick. And between things like cryptosporidium and Giardia, the federal government has gotten much more concerned about filtering these surface water systems. Giardia is, among hikers, is commonly called beaver fever because beavers can carry it, as can deer, but probably humans are the largest source with more and more hikers in the Cascades. Because Holden gets its water from surface water, it too will be required to put in a filtration system, even though Giardia have not been found in the Holden water.
We don't have a filter system. Okay.
We just use chlorine in the water here right now. Yeah?
There's always someone around the fairs and so on selling a filter for $25 or $30, or you can buy a pitcher that's got a filter in it. Are they any good?
Well, let me get to that in just a little bit.
Sorry.
No, that's a perfect question, and that's where I want to end up here. So the small systems essentially look for bacteria. The larger systems have to look for a bunch of other things. And they include things like arsenic, lead, asbestos, lead, cadmium, nitrate, radionuclides, and about 50 different carbon-containing or organic chemicals. City of Chicago is one of the largest water systems in the world and has the largest water system in the U.S. And it must monitor its water several times a day. So there are water quality problems in the city of Chicago, and the reason we know that is because they're constantly monitoring for it. Elsewhere, with smaller systems, like Holden, I said you just look for bacteria once a month, and for some of these inorganics once a year, so we know much less about the water here than in the larger systems. With the larger systems, then, it makes it easier to find a problem, and it may or may not make it easier to solve the problem. Depends on how easy the solution is, and sometimes it isn't so easy. Safe Drinking Water Act sets specific concentrations for substances in water. And those concentrations, maximum concentrations, are called MCLs, or maximum contaminant level. The maximum contaminant level for benzene, a known human carcinogen, is 5 parts per billion. If you think about the size of something like the Superdome or the Kingdom, some big dome stadium, 5 parts per billion would be the same as having 5 coffee cups in a volume the size of the Superdome or the Kingdom. So it's not very much. But that's considered the level at which, if someone were exposed for a lifetime, there would be an increase in cancer risk of 1 in 1 million. And that's how this standard is set. The goal for anything that is a chemical cancer-causing agent in humans is 0. So the maximum level you can have is 5 parts per million, but the goal is to have nothing there. Anybody remember when Perrier was pulled off the shelves a few years ago?
Yeah, I remember it, but I don't remember why.
It was pulled off the shelves because of benzene. And there was a company that was doing water testing in Virginia that didn't want to pay for really expensive distilled water, lab-grade distilled water. So for their standard water, you know, to just use for routine dilution and that kind of thing, to check out their instruments and be sure there was nothing there, they'd been using Perrier. And they kept seeing this one spike where benzene would come out. They thought for a few months, and they said, gee, that wasn't there before. So they went back and looked at some old data, and it wasn't there. So they bought some more Perrier and ran it again. Sure enough, it was still there. And then they found an old lot of Perrier, and it wasn't there. And it turned out it was a contaminant in a filter at the Perrier factory. And so they pulled all the bottled water off the shelves and then put it back later on after they cleaned up that contaminant at the factory. But that was actually benzene that was in the water at a very low level. Made you feel good about Perrier in the long run, though, because somebody had been looking at it for years and had never told anybody that the water was clean as clean could be. Lead, the concentration, maximum level of lead you can have is 50 parts per million without violating the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the goal is 20 parts per million. Now, you asked about devices that are sold. There are a variety of kinds of devices that are sold. I'm going to come back and talk about that a little bit more. But about, 3-4 years ago, the person who was then Dean of Natural Sciences at PLU called me into his office one day and said, hey, there are these guys here, they're selling this water purification device, and they're 2 PLU alumni, and they're telling me how good it is, and I just wanted to know what you thought about it, you know, and whether we should somehow get involved. And, you know, my antenna went up right away, because I'd been at a meeting a few days before that had involved some folks from the health department, and there were some guys going around Tacoma trying to sell a device. And so Tacoma actually put an ad in the newspaper warning customers about this device. It was totally fraud, 100% fraud. These two guys didn't know it. You know, they'd been suckered in the pyramid scheme. And there are a lot of these frauds that do move around from place to place. Now, what they have is essentially a dissolving electrode. And if they put distilled water on, there's so little stuff in the distilled water that the electrode doesn't dissolve. And if you put just regular tap water on, there's just a little bit of stuff in there. There's always a little bit of stuff in normal tap water, and there's just enough to make the electrode dissolve a little bit, and so it gets worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon you start seeing this brown stuff fall out of solution. It's just the electrode dissolving and then precipitating out of solution, and they always have a little light bulb on it to show you how bad your water is. But it's strictly the electrode that's iron, that's dissolving, that's causing the water to look bad, not anything that's in the water. And these kinds of scams exist all over the place. So, what can you do?
Do you know anything about the Amway filter system?
No, I don't. But let me, I'll get to filter systems in just a second. Maybe if you know something, we can figure it out.
Okay.
What you can do, in terms of ordinances, the federal government allows, Safe Drinking Water Act allows you to create a groundwater protection district if you get your water from wells. And what's happened in Tacoma is that there's actually been a groundwater protection district formed that extends along the freeway in north, and this is probably about 7 miles from north to south and about 3 miles from east to west. And the reason the groundwater protection district was formed is because most of the drinking water wells from Tacoma are in an arc through here. The groundwater protection district allows people to regulate what goes on the surface to protect the water underneath. And Safe Drinking Water Act allows that. It requires that you get 75% of your water from groundwater to form a groundwater protection district. That provides water supply protection. Now, in terms of wastewater, any of you on septic tanks? On sewer? Have public sewer? Yeah. Wastewater and septic tanks are one of the primary means of contaminating groundwater in suburban and rural areas where septic tanks exist. And I'll talk a little bit about septic tanks in a minute, but and what you can specifically do to protect your groundwater when you use your septic tank. And another is just to make sure that hazardous materials don't get dumped either on the ground or down the drain where they could potentially contaminate your water supply. Road salt is a big deal in the north where road salt is used to melt snow, and various communities have put road salt policies into effect to protect their groundwater whenever there are wells nearby, groundwater nearby that could be contaminated by road salt. Do you have hazardous waste collection days in your communities? Do you know?
No, not hazardous. Just regular garbage.
Garbage service.
Yeah.
Many communities have put hazardous waste collection days in place where once a year or twice a year, or maybe every day at the landfill, they'll take household hazardous waste. So chemicals that you no longer want, like say pesticides that are banned because they contain chlorine-containing persistent pesticides. Stuff you don't want anymore, like oil-based paints, maybe old sacks of fertilizer that have gotten hard and have been sitting in your garage and you know you're never going to use. Cleaning out your garage and basement with all those hazardous waste rather than use products that probably shouldn't be used anymore, or just let products sit around that will likely get spilled or someone might dump down the drain.
I was going to say, in our place, Edina, we're asked to take them to certain filling stations where they're collected.
Mm-hmm. That some communities do it that way. They'll designate certain places. The mm-hmm. city of Tacoma has now created a place at the landfill. So if you take garbage to the landfill, you can drop off your hazardous waste. And then they bulk them. They actually take paint and remix the paint and use the paint on public buildings. They mix three different colors, kind of a cream color. It was kind of a yuck brown, but now they've made it a better looking brown. and then kind of a green. You know, they're kind of institutional-looking colors, but at least the paint gets used up rather than getting dumped inappropriately. Oil is another big deal. Enough oil from automobiles and tractors and other things we change the oil in is dumped every year around the United States to equal 10 Exxon Valdez oil spills.
Where's it dumped?
Down storm drains, on the ground, sometimes down toilets, any number of places where it shouldn't be dumped.
What do they do with it? Like, we take that sort of thing? Well, I have have the oil change at the garage, but what do they do with it?
They reprocess it.
Oh.
One can actually buy reprocessed oil in much of the United States today. And a variety of the quick lube kinds of places actually use oil that's been reprocessed. And there's nothing wrong with that. Oil that's not reprocessed but recycled will go into things like bunker fuel for use in ships. So, in other words, they can take oil from cars in Tacoma, and since there are a lot of ships going out of Tacoma, they actually mix it in the bunker oil that's used, burned in ships, and send the oil directly to sea. But almost all oil that gets into the recycling system gets recycled either as new oil or as a lower grade of oil. And that's what bunker is. Bunker is just thicker, gooier, ickier stuff than the stuff that will be in your car. It doesn't matter if there's some carbon and other stuff in bunker oil. Personal action. You can find out about your water supply. The people who provide you with your water legally must tell you what those analyses say. And legally, they're supposed to let you know if there's any kind of problem discovered in your water. Some water systems are now including notices with your water bill that will tell you what the results were that they found out about your water. You can identify potential pollution sources and let your local health department know. Florida is actually a state that has asked the federal government to take back the responsibility for drinking water. Drinking water is what's called a, quote, delegated responsibility from the Environmental Protection Agency to the states. And the only state that has not accepted delegation is the state of Wyoming. But Florida has asked the feds to take it back. The feds are telling Maine and Washington State and Alaska that they're not doing an adequate, and there may be a couple other states, that they're not doing an adequate job and is threatened to take it back. But the feds told Florida, we don't have the resources to do it, so you guys have to continue doing it. So it's kind of a hot potato right now. But it's very likely that your local health department has been delegated the responsibility from the state. So the state has a responsibility, and then they let the local health departments do it. But there should be a state office that handles drinking water-related issues. But in terms of potential pollution sources, it's likely the local health department deals with those. If you have a problem, you can investigate alternatives, and I'll talk about those in just a second. And of course, if you have a private well, protect it. With septic systems and private wells, and I might be about private wells, but let me just say a little bit about them. One thing that's important is you locate your septic system as far away from the well as possible. And, you know, they'd be essentially at diagonal corners of your property if at all possible. It's a risk for people with septic systems and wells that you've done that, but the next door neighbor did the same thing, and unfortunately, the well and the septic system ended up very close to each other. In theory, the local health department should catch that. In practice, they don't always, particularly with old wells and old septic systems where new ones are getting built nearby. Pump your septic system every few years. 3 years is the recommended rate of pumping for septic systems, that every 3 years you have your septic system pumped. And the septage hauled off, that protects your drain field as well. So so that your drain field doesn't get ruined from the septic getting into your drain field.
What does the pumping up, where does that water go?
Usually, well, what they're pumping out is the sludge, both the floating sludge and the sludge underneath. They don't take the water. Uh-huh. And the sludge or septic usually goes to a wastewater treatment plant that then takes that sludge and maybe turns it into lawn fertilizer or soil amendment of some sort, not lawn, but rural fertilizer, mm-hmm. some kind of soil amendment, perhaps burns it. In some places it's burned. In some places it was injected underground, but hopefully all of that has stopped all over the country. To the best of my knowledge, most of the underground injection for septic has stopped. But essentially it gets processed in the same way that the sludge from your wastewater treatment plant gets processed. Here at Holden, the septic is being spread on the low end of level 2 on the tailings. And the idea is to provide organic material to the tailings to begin to recolonize trees on the tailings.
Yeah, the tailings are still there.
Yeah, right. It's not exactly your world's greatest success. But it's regulated by, on the tailings here at Holden, it's regulated by USDA Forest Service, by Environmental Protection Agency, delegated to the Washington State Department of Ecology and the Washington State Department of Health and the Chelan County Health Department, all of whom actually agreed to let the septic be spread on the tailings last year. There were 15 truckloads of septic taken from the tank here and hauled up to the tailings last year. If you have a well, know how it was constructed. Lots of people don't know whether the surface seals on their wells are intact. Never use a septic tank cleaner or pour hazardous chemicals down the drain. Never use a septic tank cleaner if you have a septic tank. One, they don't work.
Oh, really? Because I've been using something.
What have you been putting in it?
It's an Amway product.
It's
a little tablet.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
It's enzymes and or bacteria. And you personally provide enough bacteria per day to, I mean, one person is living there. You're providing enough bacteria a day, you don't need to buy anything.
Good, that cut down our cost.
Yeah.
Save a few pounds.
I mean, they'll tell you, oh, we have different bacteria and we have different enzymes and that is pure.
It says it keeps it clean, it keeps it clean. There's not.
Some of the septic tank cleaners actually are really serious. The Amway ones aren't going to hurt it. It's just basically, you know, you can just throw the dollar bills down instead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some of the cleaners actually break up the oil and grease in the tank. They're chemical. And all they do is flush that oil and grease out in your drain field and ruin your drain field, let alone possibly contaminate water supplies. State of Washington has tried to completely ban any septic tank additives. And you should hear how various organizations have come out of the woodwork saying you have to demonstrate it's causing harm or you can't legally ban it. And so it's put the burden of proof back on the health departments. But the health department, state health department, is saying, well, you demonstrate that it does some good, and it's really a legal tug of war going on right now. But literally none have been shown to do any good, and some have been shown to do serious harm. If you expect that you have any kind of contamination, whether it's a commercial system or a private system, you can have your water tested. It's not cheap. You can expect somewhere. Bacterial testing is cheap. It's maybe $15 to $30. Chelan County Health Department here actually still does it for free. I was astounded. On the west side, no county does it for free. But to have your water tested for chemical contamination, for pesticides, for metals, or for organics, is going to cost you somewhere between $200 and $2,000. That's for one test.
Big.
Well, the flip side of it is to consider how much you might pay for either bottled water or for water systems. As soon as I figure out where that transparency went. Here's the piece of paper that should be connected to it. There are two kinds of home treatment systems. There are ones called point of entry systems and ones called point of use systems. A point of entry system is one that treats all the water in the house. And if you have something like a Culligan water softener, that's a perfect example of a point of entry system, where the water softener takes out metals like calcium and magnesium and iron and manganese. Iron causes the rust stains, manganese causes the black stains that sometimes you see in the bottom of bathtubs. A point of entry system takes those out and replaces it with sodium chloride. Most point of entry systems that are water softeners do just that. Just put sodium chloride into the water and take the other metals out of the water. Point of use systems are generally in the kitchen or treat the water that goes to the kitchen, where essentially you're treating your drinking water and your cooking water. And there are five basic kinds. Filters that filter out big stuff. Rocks, grit, sediment, that kind of thing. Activated carbon, which takes out organic materials, perhaps pesticides, perhaps chlorinated organic compounds, stuff that can make the water taste bad, that may come from algae, where the algae was breaking down because it was dead. That's happened in Minneapolis a few times, where there's been an algae bloom upstream in the Mississippi River, and the water has started tasting bad. Mm-hmm. The activated carbon systems will take out that bad taste. Doesn't touch metals, does nothing to metals. Distillation systems, where you actually take the water, have it in a pot of some sort, heat it up to the point where it boils, turns into a vapor, and then condense it somewhere else. Distillation systems leave the metals behind and take the water and purify it. A distillation system does no good if you have volatile organic compounds, because those volatile organic compounds turn into a vapor and go over and collect in the distillation system just like the water does. So chloroform, methylene chloride, perchloroethylene, things that come from dry cleaning facilities that often contaminate water, gasoline, those kinds of things just distill happily right over into your water. So distillation works if you have metals, but for volatile organics, it doesn't do anything. Reverse osmosis systems are the most effective and also the most expensive and require electricity to run. Basically what they have is a membrane in them. And they have a membrane that allows water molecules to pass through, itty bitty water molecules, but it leaves pretty much everything else behind on the other side of the membrane. So it uses pressure of some sort to force those water molecules through and leave everything else behind, and then that stuff just gets flushed down the drain. That's what's used in kidney dialysis, essentially. Same kind of membrane that's used in a kidney dialysis machine. Very effective, very expensive. And then various kinds of disinfection systems, where the disinfection systems add something like chlorine or ozone or something else that kills bacteria and may well do in viruses. Those are the five most common kinds. You ask about what you buy at the county fair. Those are almost always activated carbon systems. And the activated carbon system pulls out the organic stuff. The bad thing about activated carbon systems is that If there are any bacteria coming into the system from any source, the public water supply or some contamination, it makes a very happy home for the bacteria. And you can actually end up with a greater level of bacterial contamination from the activated carbon system that is coming down the pipe from the distributor. So if you use something like that, you need to be sure that you change the filter regularly and sterilize it often. I am very skeptical when I see somebody has an activated carbon system on their faucet in terms of, you know, whether or not the quality of the water coming out of it is better or worse than came from the water purveyor. Because very often people just think, you know, it'll go for 6 months or a year or whatever without having to do anything to it. And that's not true at all. All of these point-of-use devices are very high maintenance and a pretty costly way to get water.
What would the reverse osmosis unit cost approximately? Are you talking about thousands of dollars?
Thousands of dollars, yeah.
Do they last forever?
You have to change the membranes periodically. Uh-huh. The one we have one on our water supply at PLU for our lab water. And we have a regular maintenance schedule where they come out. We actually have, to get our purified water from the lab, we have cartridges that are called ion exchange cartridges, which take the metals out, and then an RO unit, which takes everything else out, hopefully, and some of the metals. And it's a very good system, and it's very well maintained. And of course, we have to have it for lab water, so it has two great big reservoirs on it. And we pay about $2,000 a year for maintenance of it, and the system originally cost somewhere between
$15,000 and $20,000. Yeah. Okay. Now, the
carbon units. You can get home units that are probably on the order of $1,000 to $2,000. But changing those membranes is still going to cost you somewhere around $500.
The carbon unit, you said on the faucet, well, ours is down below. Does that make a difference? Is it better?
If you maintain it.
It's the same principle.
Same problem.
Sterilize it by boiling water?
Of course. Your water coming in is supposed to be treated from the water company. So you're just redoing them a little more refining.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's okay, supposedly.
Well, bacteria can still grow on the activated carbon unit because many of them have no protection from bacteria getting in.
This is a closed system.
Good.
See, in other words, it goes in, but it's all encased. Nothing can get into it.
Good. The ones on the sink that are mounted on the faucet are the worst.
Yes.
The ones that are enclosed are substantially better. Activated carbon units are very good when you have a bad taste in your water. They're very good at taking out bad taste. In terms of protecting you from the unknown, it's probably not worth it.
So what do you do?
My feeling is hassle your water purveyor. Know what the quality of the water is that's coming from your purveyor. And if it's a small water purveyor, then I would be very concerned. If it's a bigger water purveyor, the chances of contamination are much smaller.
Is that a big one?
Biggest one. I think probably 72,000 people.
Yeah. Do you know what possible contaminants you have in your water?
No, but we've had our water tested. I don't know how much testing they did. Tested okay.
That's just for bacteria, though.
Yeah.
Minerals.
Where in Florida are you?
Spring Hill.
It's Gulf Coast near Tampa.
North of Tampa. We have a springs there that the water comes out like 5 million gallons a day or 5 billion. I think we're hooked right into that.
But you don't know that we're hooked into that.
Well, it's right in line. And when they put the well down, we got a well besides city water.
Mm-hmm.
When they put the well down, it went down about 150 feet. And then all of a sudden, she dropped off and just went straight down without any trouble at all. so I think we hit that aquifer. So that water is traveling like, you know, really, really long, really good water supply.
The biggest threat of contamination outside of the urban areas like Tampa is from the phosphate mining. And there's phosphate mining that's happened historically in that part of Florida, as well as some that still goes on. And so there can be pretty high levels of phosphate contamination in the water, which can make it relatively hard.
Ours is hard.
Yeah.
It's average.
In the building where I live, they put water softener in.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of a salt or sodium.
That's sodium chloride. Essentially, the sodium chloride or salt is replacing the calcium, magnesium, iron, and manganese plus their counter ion.
And for drinking, it doesn't taste good to drink it. That's why I buy the bottled water.
Because it's saltier.
Yeah. It just doesn't
taste
good.
And that's not good for you, all that salt.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too.
I don't.
Yeah.
That's good for you.
Well, how about bottled water then? You buy it.
Yeah, I didn't get to bottled water.
Distilled, for example.
Distilled is the purest. There's no question about that. If you buy bottled water, be sure there's an association of water bottlers. And that association is named the International, I don't remember it. International Bottled Water Association is the name of the trade association. Its water must meet certain standards, and they really do kick people out if they don't meet those standards. Look for that international association on your bottled water if you can.
International Bottled Water Association. Okay.
Anybody can bottle water. Anybody. You could start a bottle of water.
You could take it right out of your tap bottle.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfectly legal to take water out of your tap.
Yeah.
When it says spring water,
Well, the grocery store in Minneapolis, she buys it, and you go in the grocery store and there's a faucet, you fill your jug. Where do they get that water?
Probably out of the public water system.
All the grocery stores, Byerly's and Lundy.
I don't know what the name of the system is, so that's what I've been trying to
think. They just probably take it out of the water system.
They may have some kind of treatment, like an activated carbon unit on it. But
I should have brought.
They only have to meet Food and Drug Administration requirements for bottled water. Now, FDA requirements. See, bottled water is a food product. It's sold as a food product. So, in theory, it meets the Safe Drinking Water Act. In theory, it's required to meet it by law. But since it's a food product, EPA doesn't inspect it. And your local health department doesn't inspect it. It falls under FDA. FDA has zero inspectors in the country to look at bottled water. Zero. None.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're buying bottled water, you buy it because it tastes better, you like the taste of it, or because it has fewer metals in it, not because it's safer. Because it's no safer, not necessarily any, quote, safer than what you get out of your tap.
Where I fill this from, they have pamphlets about the water, and I took one home, but
mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it says.
Mm-hmm. See, it probably has substantially less sodium in it
mm-hmm.
than the drinking water.
It tastes good, except as that before, there's no flavor, so I'll put a slice of lemon in there
right,
to make it taste
right.
better.
And the reason to buy it is because it tastes better. Not because it's necessarily any safer.
Yeah.
Distilled would be safer because it wouldn't have any bacteria or metals in it. It would have the gas, as you said, but it wouldn't have the bacteria.
It shouldn't have bacteria in it anyway.
Oh, I see.
That's what they usually check for anyway,
yeah.
bacteria.
Yeah, right.
So it just take the metals out. That would be the only difference.
It may or may not take the metals out. It may be the same stuff that comes out of the tap.
I mean, distilled water.
Distilled water has the metals, yeah.
They're taking that, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's the best, safest water to drink then, distilled?
Yeah.
I'll probably change my system.
The only thing you get is those gases, I guess, you get that.
And since your water is softened in your building, it makes good sense.
Well, it's good for washing clothes,
exactly.
washing the body, or
anything. Exactly.
But not for drinking.
Right.
It tastes terrible.
Right.
You could treat your well, too.
With chlorine or something else to kill the bacteria, yeah. So the bottom line is what I'm saying is, other than for drinking or possibly for cooking, you might as well just use your tap water.